Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Nine hundred fifty-five days, 12 hours, 54 minutes, 8 seconds until the end of the long national conservative nightmare, until George W. Bush leaves office voluntarily, barring impeachment proceedings between now and then. Welcome to our program. Happy Friday, Shabbat Shalom, TGIF. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius Satellite Radio, on RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Congressman Bernie Sanders is with us. It's our weekly Brunch with Bernie hour. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the longest-serving independent member of the House of Representatives. He's literally an independent, not a Democrat, not a Republican, representing the great state of Vermont and running for the United States Senate from Vermont. His website is Bernie.org. If you'd like to learn more about Bernie's efforts and his work, and not only that, all kinds of good progressive news out there. Congressman Bernie Sanders, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Always great to have you here, Bernie. What's on your list for the day?
Well, it's a busy week here in Washington, where I am speaking to you from. Yesterday, as you know, the Senate dealt with the repeal of the estate tax, which the Republicans have labeled the death tax. And I think after all is said and done about all the horrendous things that the Republican leadership does, what it really all comes down to is how can we make the wealthiest people in this country even wealthier while we cut back on the needs of the middle class and working families? And I think yesterday's effort was the epitome of what this is all about. Here you have an estate tax, Tom, and a tax which impacts, in my state, the top 0.2%. In fact, we think there are about 10 estates in the entire state of Vermont that would pay anything into the estate tax. Got that?
Mm.
We have 620,000 human beings. 10 families are impacted. And this is the issue that the Republican leadership and the President of the United States are going to the mat for. How can we repeal taxes for the upper 0.2% of the American people, the richest people in the United States of America?
Well, Bernie, I did see a report yesterday that said that over 100 members of Congress fall into that, and the President and the Vice President all are worth more than $10 million and fall into that category.
Well, there you go. I mean, that raises the whole other issue about who is in the Congress, who is in the Senate, and the unfortunate state of American democracy when we have a Congress and a Senate so much dominated by big money, by people who are themselves very wealthy, and those who are not very wealthy as often as not are representing the interests of the wealthy and powerful. On the other hand, obviously, there's some wealthy people doing a very good job. But the idea that when you have a nation in which millions and millions of people live in poverty, and that situation is getting worse, a nation in which 46 million Americans have no health insurance, that situation is getting worse. At a time when we're losing millions of good-paying jobs, that situation is getting worse. The United States Senate thinks that the most important issue that they can focus on is how you lower taxes for the richest 0.2% of the American people. And that's roughly what it is all about. And Tom, what this is about is not only immoral in terms of turning your backs on the middle class and working families in order to protect the very, very wealthy, but it really touches the fiber of what American democracy is about. Because when you make millionaires and billionaires even wealthier at the expense of the middle class and working families, what do you think they do with this money? They use it for political purposes. They protect their interest even better. They hire more lobbyists. So while ordinary working people are working so hard, 50, 60 hours a week in my state, not uncommon for people to be working two or three jobs, those people don't have the time to get involved in the political process in a meaningful way. They can't go to meetings. They have children to take care of in the evening. They're exhausted in some cases. So the rich get richer and they can hire more lobbyists, which result in the wealthy becoming even wealthier. And I think that is just not a good thing.
And in fact, we find that there are 18 families who, in aggregate, if the estate tax, the Paris Hilton tax, is done away with, would save $77 billion. 18 families have funded a multi-hundred-million-dollar 10-year campaign to rename the Paris Hilton tax, or the estate tax, as the death tax, and build, you know, grassroots support for it among people who don't really understand what it is and will never be affected by it.
Exactly. Exactly. There are millions of people today who say, oh, my goodness, I want to leave $20,000 or $30,000 to my kids, and the government's going to, you know,
or even a couple hundred thousand.
Right, right. Yeah. It ain't true.
Yeah.
All right. We're talking about 99.8% of the people don't pay a nickel in the estate tax. It was one of the study groups here discovered that. You remember our good friend Lee Raymond, who is the former CEO of ExxonMobil, who received a $398 million retirement package. Well, the good news is that if the estate tax is repealed, Mr. Raymond would receive his family would receive $164 million tax break alone. Now, what's also really bad about this is not just that we are rewarding people who certainly do not need to be rewarded, but in the process, you're driving up the national debt by $1 trillion over a 10-year period, which our kids and our grandchildren are going to have to pay off. So we're in further indebting our kids and our grandchildren, who are already, you know, dealing with an $8.2 trillion national debt, much of which comes from Bush's disastrous policies, to give tax breaks to people who don't need it. And then on top of that, because the deficit is so high and the national debt is so high, we have a president who says, oh, yes, we can afford to give hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks for the richest 0.2%. But you know what? I guess we have to cut back on Medicare, and I guess we have to cut back on Medicaid, and certainly we have to tell middle-class families in America who want to send their kids to college that they're going to have to pay more because we have to cut back on financial aid. And, oh, yes, we have to eliminate nutrition programs for low-income seniors. And those veterans who put their lives on the line defending this country, well, you know, we've thrown a couple of hundred thousand of them off of VA health care already. We may have to throw out more, because we just don't have the money. Oh, yes, but we do have the money for huge tax breaks for the wealthiest 0.2%. So after all is said and done, and after all the gay marriage and all the other stuff, this is really the agenda of what the president and the Republican leadership are about. And it's not an accident, by the way, that in the same week we deal with this, you deal with, you know, the constitutional amendment on gay marriage, which is very clearly a political attempt to deflect attention away from the real issues that face the American people, the decline of the middle class, the growing gap between the rich and the poor, the disintegration of our healthcare system, the war in Iraq, global warming, and all these other issues which the president has nothing important to say about.
Now, another issue that you voted on yesterday, and I saw your vote, and congratulations on it, which is also about the big guy basically, you know, screwing the little guy, the big companies being able to wipe out small companies, is net neutrality, that the
big
phone companies.
Big issue, you know, Tom. Big
go
issue.
For it here, Bernie.
You know, and the issue here is, as you and I have discussed, and why I appreciate so much the work that you and other progressive radio people do, is we're living in a nation in which large media conglomerates are getting bigger and have more power. And when you turn on television and you watch CBS, NBC, ABC, Fox, what you're watching are networks that are owned and controlled by large multinational media conglomerates. Clearly, one of the antidotes to increased corporate ownership of the media has been the Internet. And those of us who use the Internet take for granted the fact that there is a huge and wide range of information out there, right? And you can dial some little blog or someplace, you can get to some little magazine, and you can get that website up on your screen quite as fast as you can get the New York Times or CBS. Okay? We take that for granted. And that is why we're proud that the Internet is such a democratic institution. Well, needless to say, our friends who own the lines, whether it's the phone companies or the cable companies, want to see changes in that. And they want to move toward a system, and Bush's FCC is making it easier to do that by changing the rules, which in fact can lead us to the day, if we do not stop it, where you're going to have a two-tier system. You're going to have a fast track and a slow track. And that will mean that if you pay additional fees, you'll be able to continue to get high-speed service as you do now. But if you are a small startup business, if you are a small magazine or newspaper, and you don't pay the fees, when people try to access your website, the service may be substantially slower, which will give, as you just indicated, a significant advantage to the big over the small, the little guys.
Yeah, and the vote was almost straight down party lines. Republicans voting against net neutrality, Democrats voting for it.
Most of them, but not all,
by the way. Yeah, right. It's 16 minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Our telephone number, 866-440-8466. Toll free across the United States. Give us a call. 16 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Looks too hard, trying to make ends meet. He's got to pay his credit cards. Yeah, he's been dealing with the odds that even Vegas can be.
It's the Working Man Blues. Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Talk radio for the rest of us. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Bernie.org is Bernie's website. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room. Our toll-free number all across the United States, 866-440-8466. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. And Bernie, in Michigan, there's a situation very similar to what you're facing in Vermont, where a multi-millionaire is essentially trying to buy the governor's race. And Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan, is on the line, listening on WTKG. Rick, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yes, good day, gentlemen.
Good day.
Bernie, we need 435 like you in the House, or 100 in the Senate.
Thank you very much, Rick. Well, we're going to make some progress, I think.
This is something I brought to Tom's attention, of course, and I want to deal with the DeVos situation running for governor. But in the city of Grand Rapids, as I told Tom, we have seven commissioners who run the show, and that although it's nonpartisan, they are pretty much known to be Democrats, and the mayor is supposed to be a very liberal Democrat. But here's what's happening in our fair city. Years ago when I was a kid, the Grand Rapids Public Museum was free. Then they moved and they charged admission, and now it's being given over to a private foundation. The zoo was transferred from the city to the county, and they charge admission now. And, of course, we pay taxes to have our trash hauled away. But now we have to put it in bags. And get this now. If you buy a bag that doesn't have a city logo on it, the trash people will not pick it up. You've got to put a city tag on top of it. And all this is privatization. And I think if I, you know, may speak too strongly here, I think it's almost fascist in the sense that fascism in the economic sense, where big government works with big business and the little guy gets screwed and the unions are just decimated. What do you think?
Well, I think that what you are seeing is a movement toward privatization, certainly from George Bush on down all over the country. And generally speaking, these are efforts which are counterproductive, not just for workers, but for the citizens as well. I was mayor of Burlington, Vermont for 8 years, and we resisted efforts of privatization because what I believe is if you have people who go into public service, whether it is the postal service, whether it is air traffic controllers, no matter what it may be, if you pay people good wages, treat them with dignity, allow them to make a career of what they do, there will be less turnover. You'll have well-trained people doing their jobs well. In the long run, it benefits the taxpayers because you don't have to train new people over and over again. And everybody benefits from that. But what is happening is in cities, states all over the country, for a variety of reasons, some of them financial, they are privatizing. And it is a very sad thing that when we're seeing libraries in America either closing down or limiting their hours, we're seeing museums charging fees that didn't used to be the case. This should not be happening in the wealthiest country in the history of the world. Getting back to the point I made a few moments ago, a country whose leadership now wants to give huge tax breaks to the wealthiest 0.2%. Yeah, we charge admission for museums, we cut back on library hours because we don't have the funds for ordinary folks, but we do have money for huge tax breaks. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Well said. KJ in Camas, Washington, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, hi, Representative. It's an honor to speak to you. You are a true hero. The general question, what you're talking about, this endless privatization, us possibly losing the Internet, which is pretty much all we have now for any kind of discourse. Worst case scenario, they cheat, they steal the election again in November. What's plan B?
Plan A is not to become paranoid. Plan A is to understand that you have a president now of whom more and more Americans now understand that in area after area after area, issue after issue after issue, this guy and his ideology are moving this country in a very, very bad direction. The American people are catching up. It is not just progressives. It is not just independents. It is not just moderates. Even many of his people in his conservative base are saying, what is going on in Iraq? Why is there not a plan to begin bringing our troops home? So I think that plan A is to make sure that we all work very, very hard in this country, in all 50 states, to end the one-party government we currently have in Washington. We have right-wing Republicans controlling the White House, the U.S. Senate, and the House of Representatives. And I will tell you, not that I want to get into this at great length, but in the state of Vermont, we have organized well over 1,000 volunteers in our own state for our own campaign, whose goal is to knock on virtually every door in the state of Vermont to talk real issues to the people in the coming 5 months. And I would hope that all over America we will see similar efforts like that. And when we do that, we can beat all of the money that our opponents will be throwing out.
Yeah, and to whatever extent they may be rigging the game however they can, overwhelming numbers will beat that. Hopefully.
That's right.
So, Bernie Sanders is with us. Bernie.org is website. Our number, 866-440-8466. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the True People's Radio. We'll be back right after this. Stick around, my friends.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, helping you win the water cooler wars. Tom Hartman here with you, along with our hero, Congressman Bernie Sanders. Bernie, I understand you may have to dash off and vote.
Well, interestingly enough, we have an amendment that we're going to be offering, which would prohibit the Export-Import Bank from using U.S. taxpayer money to provide loans and guarantees to large oil companies. It seems to me that at a time when ExxonMobil and all these other oil companies are making billions and billions of dollars in profit, that maybe we might have a better use for taxpayer money than providing corporate welfare to those guys. Now, I don't know, you know, somebody may disagree with me, but that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So in about 7 or 8 minutes, I'm going to be dashing off to the floor to offer this anti-corporate welfare amendment. We'll see how we'll do.
Okay, great. Well, just let us know when you have to go, and yep. And if you make it back, great. And if not, I'll carry the show here. So, all righty, let's get back to our phone lines. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. And where do we go here? Patricia in Sacramento, California, listening on KSAC Talk City in Sacramento. Hey, Patricia.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Congressman Sanders. I wanted to ask, this morning on CNN, the head of the Congress, the Canadian Muslim Congress, Mr. Tariq Fatah, was being interviewed. And they were asking him about, you know, these guys were born in Canada. What would, you know, you're born in an industrialized country, you're able to live a good life. What would turn you to become so extremist? One of the comments he made that just took me away was that he basically said, I'm paraphrasing, that the Saudis are pouring tons of money into Canada and the United States. Now, we know the ties between the Bush administration and the Saudi government because they're turning a blind eye to it. But, Mr. Sanders, do you believe there's something deeper than this that we don't really know or we don't see?
Well, you raise a number of questions. Ironically, just a few minutes ago, there was an amendment on the floor of the House as part of the same piece of legislation, foreign operations, about cutting funding off for Saudi Arabia. And one of the arguments against it is Saudi Arabia is a very strange government. They, on one hand, they act, you know, very nice, and they're trying to move to democracy and so forth and so on. On the other hand, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that Saudi money is going to fund some very nefarious activities and some extreme, extreme Islamic fundamentalist work. So to the degree that you raise that issue, I don't know what's going on in terms of money from Saudi Arabia coming into Canada or the United States, but we do know that they are funding some of these madrasas and some of these real extremists. And the deal that they have done with the devil there is to keep these Islamic fundamentalists to the degree that they can out of Saudi Arabia, out of challenging the royal family there and say, okay, you do your work wherever you want to do it. You can do it elsewhere, but don't come into our country. So, yeah, there is some real concern about that, and it's something we have got to be very vigorous in opposing.
So when you say the deal that they've done with the devil, what you mean is the deal that the Saudis have done
yes.
with the devil of extremism.
Right. What they have said is, we'll fund you. You could do your work in Pakistan. You could do your work wherever you want to do it. But just
Canada or the United States.
Our nice little family here.
Yeah, interesting. Bernie in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, listening on WPTT. Bernie, you're live with Bernie.
Yes, hi. You had mentioned earlier about the tax cut to the wealthy. I just wondered if the congressman had anything to say about long-tail theory. It sort of deals with statistics.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
About long-tail theory. It's just sort of a distribution. They use it for wealth distribution and so forth.
I'm not familiar with that phrase, but what I do know is that in America today we have by far the most unfair distribution of wealth and income of any major country on earth, and it is getting worse. And it is, to me, not only immoral that we have seen a growth of millionaires and billionaires in recent years while we have the highest rate of childhood poverty in the world, in the industrialized world, but as I mentioned earlier, I think when you move toward an oligarchic structure of so few with so much and so many with so little, it really endangers the fabric of democracy. You can't have a vibrant democracy where everybody feels they can participate in the political process when a handful of people have tremendous power over the media, have tremendous power over the political process, while other people are just struggling to keep their heads above water. So, that is my concern. And by the way, that is an issue, distribution of wealth and income, that we just do not talk about enough in the United States. The media virtually never mentions it, but it is a huge, huge issue.
Just to punctuate that, over at the LCurve.org, LCurve.org is a website, and they say if you were to look at the distribution of wealth in the United States on a football field, the median U.S. family income, $40,000, at the 50-yard line, you'd be standing at the 50-yard line, would be a stack of $100 bills 1.6 inches high. If you got to the 95-yard line, you're at the 95th percentile, that person earns $100,000 a year. That's a stack of $100 bills 4 inches high. At the 99-yard line, the income is $300,000 a year. That's a stack of $100 bills a foot high. When you get to 1 foot from the goal line, that's $1 million. That's 99.99th percentile, $1 million annual income. That's a 40-inch high stack of $100 bills. You get 3 inches from the end of the goal line, the stack of $100 bills becomes 50 kilometers, over 30 miles high.
Right. That's right. And what we have seen in recent years, amazingly, is not just the richest 1% becoming richer. You've seen the richest 0.1%.
Right.
And again, these are the guys who own a lot of the media. They own the politics of America to a significant degree, and we don't talk about it. But this is an issue, Tom, that needs to be talked about, both from a moral perspective, but also about what it means to American democracy.
Well, we fought a revolutionary war to do away with the landed gentry.
And guess what?
We are.
They're alive and well right downstairs on the floor of the house.
Yeah. Sandy in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, listening on Sirius, I assume, Sandy. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Okay. Hi. Nice to talk to you.
Hi.
Quick question, please. I am very curious as to why the tax law changed the rate that children are taxed at. I'm speaking about the teenagers between the ages of 14 and 17. They are now taxed on unearned income at their parents' tax rates. I would like to know the thinking, the rationale behind that, That seems very punitive to teens that are trying to save for college. I would think it should be tax-free for the teens. Who did that? Why?
Well,
and can that be changed?
Without being totally familiar with that particular section of the tax bill, what I can tell you is that, obviously, the people who do that are the people who run our government today. And as you know, we have a one-party government, Republicans controlling the White House, the U.S. Senate, and the U.S. House. And at the same time as they give tax breaks to people who don't need it, in many respects, not just this instance, but in many respects, working people all over this country are going to end up paying higher taxes because as we cut back on federal aid to education or other needs, local taxes and state taxes may have to go up. So what you have here in Washington are people whose primary sense of duty, it seems to me, is to benefit the very wealthiest people, and they've turned a blind eye to the needs of the middle class, or in this case, to young working people.
Janet at Olympia, Washington, listening on Talk 1090 in Seattle. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Morning. This is Janet from Olympia, and I am very disturbed by some things I'm hearing here. Speaking of giving away America, it seems as if we're about to give away our airlines. We're giving away the size of the planes and who makes them and who works.
Tom, I'm going to have to interrupt. I'm sorry to have to jump in, Janet. I'm going to have to leave the office now and get down to the floor of the House.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So go for it.
So my
go
apologies,
for it, Bernie.
Janet.
Oh, all right.
Okay, we'll see
sorry.
You later. Bye-bye.
Yep. Good luck, Bernie. Yeah, we lost Bernie. He'll be back one of these days soon. Janet, I'll continue to take phone calls here, and we can turn this into an open forum discussion area. But Janet, you're absolutely right. The outsourcing, it's not just the lack of competitiveness in some cases. It's although Boeing is doing pretty good, but now you have airline. First of all, you have Republicans who want to change the law so that foreign investors and foreign governments can even own U.S. domestic airlines, or that they can, you know, merge with foreign airlines.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, we already have a situation where about half of all the maintenance done on U.S. domestic airlines right now is being done outside the United States because it's cheaper. They're doing it down in Costa Rica. They're doing it in Mexico.
This is the thing, and this is the kind of stuff is what's really bothering me. We're giving away everything. I mean,
I know.
It's like
I know. It's,
we
it,
can't
it's,
do anything anymore. And
well,
how are they going to
we can't do anything cheap anymore, Janet. That's the problem.
Yeah.
As long as the middle class wants to have a decent salary, then the corporate managers are not going to make as much money. And as David Ricardo wrote back in 1816 in his essay on profits, when the price of labor goes down, it does not reduce the cost of a manufactured good. The cost of a product that's sold in the marketplace is determined by how much people will pay for it. The market determines the price of the product. And so if you can reduce labor costs, you simply increase profits. So when these big companies move everything offshore in order to reduce labor costs, they're doing it purely and simply so the CEOs can make more money. It's just that simple. Thanks a lot for the call. Mitch in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hey, Mitch, we have about a half a minute here before we've got to take a break. Quick point. Mitch? No Mitch. Okay. Well, let's go to David in Manassas, Virginia. David?
Manassas, Virginia. You know, home
hey,
of,
David.
Civil War battle.
There you go.
First of all, Tom, real quick, I'm the first time calling you. I'm an adult with ADD. I want to thank you for your wonderful books. You've done a lot of positive for me in dealing with ADD with your books.
Well, thank you, David. Thank you.
It's wonderful. Anybody out there struggling with ADD in their life or in their family, I highly recommend your books to them.
Yeah, this all started with my son being diagnosed with that. So
yeah. I mean, just
although I could probably put up my hand myself as well. In fact, David, what I'm going to have to, and David Poole, my producer's over here waving his hand. David, we've got to take a break here. I'm going to pop you on hold for a question because I know you wanted to talk about, or at least the call screener says you wanted to talk about Google and this stuff. We'll get back to that in just a second. Hang on here, David, and we'll continue in just a moment. It's the radio support group of, by, and for We the People of the United States of America, the Tom Hartman radio program. Check out Bernie, even though Bernie had to go vote, check out his website, bernie.org, for more information about Congressman Bernie Sanders. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Slice like this.
And welcome back. Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting for a Change. We were talking with David in Manassas, Virginia. Hey, David.
Hi, Tom. You know, I've been following the net neutrality issue very closely. And as Congressman Sanders mentioned, you know, it has a lot to do with, like, the speed of certain websites loading. As someone who used to work at a small telecom working in the Internet division, I know it also would affect things like Internet phones, like Vonage and Lingo, which I have. You know, companies might not allow you to use an Internet phone other than their own and other services like that. But what I was really surprised to see, it's been on, I've seen a commercial running. Now, I don't know if it's locally here in the D.C. area. I'm outside of Washington, D.C., or if it's something that Comcast is sending through, because I get my my television through them, and it wouldn't surprise me if it's actually them putting it on. There's some kind of a organization, and I wish I had the name with me, but I'm in my car, and they're running this commercial, and they're claiming that through the net neutrality bill, and they specifically point at Google, you know, pointing at the big player, I guess, the name everybody knows, saying Google doesn't want you to have a choice in cable television entertainment.
Right.
And I don't know what it is exactly, and I was hoping maybe you or the congressman knows what exactly they're referring to in this bill. What part of this bill can they possibly claim net neutrality will prevent, you know, cable television competition? Because I'm sure what they're referring to is the fact that, like, around this area, Verizon is rolling out cable television through the phone lines.
Right. Basically, like what they're suggesting is that anything that involves government regulation is going to ultimately hurt the quote free market end quote. Forget the fact that all of, you know, that the individual cable slots are created by government. I mean, the whole bandwidth is the bandwidth in the radio frequency spectrum is created by government. The cable systems go over, you know, public rights of way, which are administered by, et cetera, et cetera. But that specific ad I haven't seen, but I've seen a number of ads where basically they're pushing this thing and saying that if the Republicans have their way, then we'll have choice. And really what they mean is AT&T will have choice.
Yeah, well, I went onto the organization's website real quick just because I was curious who was behind it. And, of course, no surprise, AT&T was right there.
Yeah.
And it just infuriates me. It reminds me of the ad with the elderly couple back when the Clintons were trying to push universal health care. It's that kind of diversionary tactic.
Yeah.
That just infuriates me.
I got it. And I agree with you, David. David, thanks a lot for the call. Good to
Thank
hear
you,
from
Tom.
You. You're welcome. Jack in Sacramento. By the way, just to let you know, Monday and Tuesday of next week, I'll be broadcasting live from the Take Back America conference in Washington, D.C. And what is this, David?
Reminder.
Well, that's what I'm doing right now. Drop by June Monday and Tuesday, June 12th and 13th. Come in and say hi. I'll actually be broadcasting live there from the Take Back America conference. So, Jack in Sacramento, California. Jack, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Really enjoy your show. Still a lot. Really concerned about, you know, the Rolling Stone article that you covered. Thanks for covering in detail. What about who's going to – I wonder if Congress – I wanted to ask Bernie Sanders if we're going to investigate this. I mean – we have criminal behavior, and nothing's happening. Not to mention evil, but anyway.
Yeah, well, Bernie's not here to speak for himself, so I'm not going to presume to. I hope that he reads the article if he hasn't read it yet.
Yeah.
And beyond that, in fact, I hope every member of Congress reads the article. It's something that needs to be widely read.
Yeah, and, but I mean, it's amazing. You know, like you said, if we flipped it around, it was happening on the Republican side, Rush and the team would all be screaming. And
They'd be raising holy hell.
Yeah, I mean, it's outrageous. You know, of course, you said this. You just don't understand why it's not being. It's got to be investigated. We can't go on with illegal.
And the other thing that baffles me is in the Busby race, you know, for Duke Cunningham's seat, they have right now in that county some 60,000 votes that haven't been counted, provisional ballots and absentee ballots that have not yet been counted. And she lost by 4,500 votes, more or less. And declared that, you know, threw in the towel. And the basis of her campaign was, please vote early with an absentee ballot.
Mm-hmm.
So, and in fact, we had a caller into this program yesterday who said he was working with MoveOn.org, working the phone banks, and that literally he called 50 people and 40 of them said that they had already voted for Busby by absentee ballot. And so I don't understand why she conceded when the absentee ballots haven't been counted, and what, for that matter, why the Secretary of State's office called the election when the absentee ballots haven't been counted. And I'm still waiting to hear. We have calls into the Busby campaign. We have calls into the Secretary of State's office, and nobody Nobody is returning our calls. I can't find out what's going on this from anybody. So if any of our listeners have an opportunity to learn about this, why, you know, when this is, there were, she got in the neighborhood of 55,000 votes, more or less. Her opponent got in the neighborhood of 60,000 votes. She lost by about 5,000 votes. And there's still 60,000 votes that haven't been counted. And the whole basis, she did this huge mail order campaign about vote early with absentee ballots. Pat in Green Glove Cove, Florida. Hey, Pat, we have just a little less than a minute left. Quick point you wanted to make about Boeing?
Boeing about just the fact that their leadership was so poor and how they moved their company headquarters to Chicago so they could get, quote, closer to their customers. Well, you don't.
They did it for tax break. They were playing one community off against another.
Well, sort of, but that's not really why they moved. They were trying to transition the company at the time to become an aircraft servicing company rather than an aircraft manufacturing company. It would return a better return for their stockholders. So we went from a company that was virtually 7% of the gross domestic export to down to about 2%. And just gutted the company. They have new leadership now. They've gone through two leadership changes, and they're back, and they're building a 787 now. But the wing technology is being built in Japan. The airplane's being assembled in Seattle by less than 2,000 employees. Anyway, that was going to be my point.
Well, you made it very, very well, Pat. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Amazing. Amazing. And this is what happens when you have no industrial policy in a nation at all. Other than, we'll just let the corporations do whatever makes the most profit for them. And very often what makes the most profit for them is to move the business to Mexico or China or Japan or someplace else and say to the American workers, hey, good luck. You're on your own. It's a conservative policy, but it's also an insane policy. 57 minutes past there. We'll be right back. Tom Hartman here with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Tom Hartman here with you. Over the last week or three, we have been chronicling, particularly given Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s new piece in Rolling Stone magazine, the massive Republican efforts across the United States to disenfranchise voters, to reduce the number of voters, to make it more and more difficult for people to get on the voting rolls. And in defense of those efforts, David Tebow is with us. He's the editor-in-chief of CNS News, Cybercast News Service, CNSnews.com, the website. And David, you take issue with the New York Times editorial from day before yesterday, pointing out that Ken Blackwell in Ohio and Jeb Bush down in Florida have both put into place laws so restrictive that even the League of Women Voters is afraid to register people for fear of going to jail. David Tebow?
I'll say that.
So, I'm sorry. Say it again, David. You weren't potted up.
You are good for a good laugh.
Okay. Why?
Well, you do have the right to register to vote in the United States. You don't have the right to fraudulently register to vote. And the way you just described it, Tom, is bunk. And you folks from the Democratic Party haven't been able to get over your losses in 2000 and 2004 yet, so you continue to advance this canard of Republicans trying to make it impossible for people to vote, when the truth is that in 2004 in Ohio and 2000 in Florida, you Democratic groups, including the League of Women Voters, and yes, it's a liberal group, try to register people fraudulently, including names of people who are dead or names that are multiplied so that they can be registered over and over again.
You're familiar with Paul Weyrich, I assume, David Tebow.
Well, I'm familiar with Paul Weyrich, yes.
Weyrich, okay. And you know, the guy who claims credit for the Reagan Revolution, for getting Reagan elected, who is now the main promoter, frankly, of Ken Blackwell for vice president in 2012. And wouldn't we? Oh, yeah, it's still, I guess it would be.
It would be 2012. Just
yeah, 12. There you go.
Yeah.
Here's Paul Weyrich speaking to a group of Republican activists about 13, 14 years ago in a church talking about the Republican strategy over the next decade.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome, good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Wouldn't it be accurate to say, David Thiebaud, that the right wing in the United States is so out of touch with the mainstream that you guys have figured out that the only way that you can win an election is to reduce the number of people voting?
No, of course not. What are you saying? Is that he doesn't want people who don't have any interest in politics and don't have an IQ above 40 to cast a ballot when they're told how to vote by some liberal. That's what he's talking about, and that's the truth, and I back that too. And
but he
if
would
you had any decency, you would back that too.
So, well, let me flip that around. Then what about those people who don't have an IQ above 40 who are showing up in Jerry Falwell's church who are getting the voting guides? I mean, these guys passed out over 10 million of these voting guides in the 2000 election. You have a problem with that?
I don't think that there are many people who showed up to hear Jerry Falwell who have an IQ below 40.
Okay, well, I don't think that there's many Democrats who are voting who have an IQ before 40.
But, Tom, they do register people who have never been involved in politics in their lives. They line them up, and they tell them how to vote. And they've registered them, and these people can't even write their own names. But they register them, and then they line them up to vote. And in Missouri, in the 2000 election, John Ashcroft lost. No one mentions that
John Ashcroft lost
because they kept the polls open for an extra 2 hours in St. Louis in the inner city so that people who had no interest in politics but who were registered by liberal groups could line up and vote for a dead man.
I'm sorry, what happened in Missouri, David, is that John Ashcroft was recognized by the people of Missouri as such a right-wing crank that they would rather vote for a dead guy than vote for John Ashcroft.
The people who voted in those last 2 hours in St. Louis didn't know John Ashcroft from Mickey Mouse.
People all across the state of Missouri voted against John Ashcroft, David.
He lost a narrow election to Mel Carnahan, who was dead, and he lost that narrow election because the polls in St. Louis were kept open beyond what they were supposed to be open for an extra 2 hours for the inner city to vote. That's why
the larger issue here, David, is there are some serious issues of vote that I think, frankly, should be of concern to both of us about voting out there. For example, the only politician to have successfully hacked a Diebold machine live and on national TV and flipped an election live and on national TV. You know who that was?
No.
Howard Dean. I can play you the audio if you'd like. 90 seconds long if you want to hear it.
And what exactly did he do?
He hacked a Diebold machine and flipped an election.
And why should I care about that?
Well, I would think that you would agree with me that having private corporations run proprietary software and that is not accountable to any of us, that cannot be seen by any of us, by government or any oversight agencies, running these machines and telling us how we voted is not a good thing.
Well, how would you have it done, Tom?
I would have it done with open source software, and I would have the machines purchased from the private companies by the municipalities or the states or the local districts, the way it's done in Australia.
You probably would have it done by the Democratic officials in each of those cities and counties and towns, right?
No, I really don't think this should be a partisan issue. I would do it the way that Canada does it and the way that all of Europe does it. And having lived in Germany and watched one of these elections, do it on paper.
I don't have a problem with that, Tom. As long as it's done fairly and people are registered in a fair and honest way, they're not ramrodded through the system just to stack an election in one particular way or another.
But David, you're out there trying to make a big deal out of registering people.
Because in order to vote, you need to register.
When you don't even know if your vote is actually being counted, isn't that a bigger issue?
That is the ultimate issue.
Yeah, so why are you guys joining me in saying if Howard Dean can hack a Diebold machine in 90 seconds on live national TV, when we come back from the break, I'll play the audio for you. It'll shock you. If Howard Dean can do that, then maybe we should rethink having these machines being the instruments that we use to vote on.
Well, I don't have a problem with that. Determine whatever the machine or the paper ballot, determine whatever it is that you want to use as a voting instrument. But then make sure that the people who vote are honest and
so
fair.
Now we get back to the issue of why is it that in these two states, Ohio and Florida, that's a whole other debate if you want to have that debate.
But that's why you're complaining.
No.
Because you lost.
No, what I'm saying is that passing laws that say that if you're registering people, you have to go through a training program in all 86 counties in the state,
right,
or you can go to jail.
What's
if you're going to register
that,
people. If I'm going to register people, I don't want to have to go from county to county and go through 86 training programs before I go out and stand on the corner with a clipboard and say, hey, are you registered to vote?
Okay, Tom, you just said about the voting machines themselves that we need the highest standard of honesty and fairness, right?
Right.
But you're willing to let any Tom, Dick, or Harry from the street corner register people to vote.
I don't have a problem with that. It is up to the individual counties and cities and states to make sure that the people who are voting are actually who they are.
Shouldn't we care about that at least as much as the integrity of the voting machines?
Because there's not a whole lot of evidence of people, phony people voting out there compared to the evidence of elections being flipped.
There's tremendous evidence in Missouri and in Ohio in 2004. And by the way, that's why Blackwell has introduced these new rules about making it more standardized for registering people to vote, because the inner city manipulation that existed in 2004 in Ohio by your side.
It's not standardized, David. It's impossible.
No, it's not.
He doesn't want any new voters. He pulled 300,000 people off the voting rolls, most of them illegally.
In a disciplined way, with integrity and honesty, you can do it. But
you had Republicans running caging operations in Ohio in violation of two separate court orders and blowing people off the voting rolls illegally in the 2004 election in Ohio, and Ken Blackwell wants to keep them off the voting rolls.
Ken Blackwell wants to keep frauds off the voting rolls.
We're talking with David Tebow. He's the editor-in-chief of CNS News, Cybercast News Service, cnsnews.com. And we'll take your calls as well here in the next 10 minutes or so. You want to stick around for one more segment, David?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. Our number, 866-440-8466. If you have something you want to contribute to this conversation, 16 minutes past the hour, it's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Just because we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things they do look awful.
Talking about my generation.
Hope I die before I get old.
And welcome back. Helping you win the water cooler wars. Tom Hartman here with you. David Tebow is with us, the editor-in-chief of Cybercast News Service, cnsnews.com. David has just very articulately laid out the elitist conservative position that people whose IQ are lower than David approves of, or people who are not literate, should not be allowed to vote, that this isn't really a democracy, it's a meritocracy, and only well-educated white people should be allowed to vote.
That's not what I said, and you know it.
You said you were talking about inner cities, you were talking about people with low IQs. I get that as a right-wing euphemism for black people. I'm assuming that's what when you're talking about the inner city of St. Louis, that's what you're talking about, aren't you?
Well, the people who lined up to vote in St. Louis in 2000 happened to be disproportionately black, but it has nothing to do with
And you don't think they should
black.
Vote. And you just said you don't think that they should vote because they were too stupid to write their own names.
It doesn't have anything to do with them being black. It has to do with them being ignorant. And if they are
ignorant, so in a democracy, people who are ignorant should not be allowed to participate.
If they can't write their own name, Tom, and they don't follow politics, and they're being ramrodded by some liberal activist, no, frankly,
right, so,
I don't think that they should vote. They have
okay,
to
well, good. I'm glad to have you on the record.
Because
absolutely, your position is consistent with the conservative position. I'm Sir Edmund Burke in 1790, in writing to Thomas Paine, said, you know, it does me no harm if a man is allowed to engage in a profession as servile as a tallow maker, candle maker, or as a hairdresser. But it does society considerable violence if such a man is allowed to participate in governance by voting. That's what Sir Edmund Burke said. Russell Kirk repeated that in 1953 in his book The Conservative Mind. He quoted Burke on that. That is the basis of conservative thought, and you've done a very good job of articulating it, David.
Everyone has the right to vote in this country if they do so fairly and honestly.
Unless they're stupid or not politically informed.
The people who are stupid and not politically informed are railroaded and ramrodded by liberal activists who use them as pawns.
Okay, so everybody has the right to vote except those people who are stupid, not politically informed, and railroaded by liberal activists.
They do have the right to vote. Unfortunately, those people
but you
are
don't
being
think they should have the right to vote.
By liberal activists, or they would not vote in the first place, and you know it.
No, I don't. I don't believe that at all. And you don't think they should have the right to vote. I get it. Let's take a few calls here. Herbie in Olympia, Washington, listening on Talk 1090 in Seattle. Hey, Herbie. You're live with David Tebow.
Hello. Yes, I would. I take strong, strong issue with Mr. Tebow's argument. America is about politics, and it is about everyone having the right to vote. And I do not think that Mr. Tebow, or whatever his name is there, is wrong, is totally wrong on this. And if he wants to disenfranchise people, I've got a suggestion. We got rid of a party called the Dixiecrats, and they found a home over there in the Republican Party. And those people wanted to disenfranchise 11% of our population back in the 1940s. That's all I've got to say.
Let me tell you something, Tom.
Yeah, thanks, Herbie.
I lived for 11 years in a community that was 95% black. It just so happens.
Is this the some of my best friends are black thing? Are you actually going to say that, David?
Are you going to let me finish?
Sure.
It just so happened that all of the people who lived in my community were hardworking Americans who raised their kids, did the right thing, and when they cast their ballots, they did so with integrity. And that's all I'm saying.
But that's different from the black people in St. Louis.
It doesn't matter what the color of somebody's skin is. It does matter, as Martin Luther King Jr. said, about the content of their character.
And so we should have a voting test on character.
The thing is, if your liberal activist friends would stop lining up people who have no interest in voting but who are being manipulated, then this wouldn't even be an issue.
Well, I could say the same thing about the people who are pouring out of mega churches in the tens of thousands all across the United States going, you know, heading right over to the polls.
The person that goes into church is more educated than the person that your liberal activists are lining up.
You don't think that the black people in St. Louis that you're saying were lining up go to church on Sundays? I'll bet you have a higher percentage of them going to church than in the white suburbs.
I'll take that bet.
Okay, Steve in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Steve, you're live with David Tebow. We have about a minute and a half left.
Hey, Mr. Tebow, I mean, you think that people should be allowed to vote only if they meet your little criteria? I mean, what the heck kind of democracy is that? And besides, you say about these people that aren't, that have been or the people that have been the dead people and that are not registering correctly in these states. Where's the proof of that?
The proof is in all of the evidence that prompted Ken Blackwell to come up with the new training guidelines in Ohio.
So because there's been a few dead people on the rolls and he should disenfranchise thousands of other people, do you think that's right?
Hundreds of thousands.
It wasn't a few dead people. It was a lot of fraud. By the way, did we mention that Blackwell is black?
Hundreds of thousands should be able to pay for that?
Did we mention that Ken Blackwell happens to be an African-American?
Yeah, we'll have to leave it at that. David Tebow, it's always good talking to you. You give as good as you get. I appreciate it.
All right, sir.
People can learn more about it over at cnsnews.com, the Cybercast News Service. David Tebow, the executive editor. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 27 minutes past the hour. Viagra for your brain. We'll be right back.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows.
Ah, you tell him, Leonard. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Our program brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics. 1-800-511-MAX. 1-800-511-MACS. 1-800-511-MAX. Give them a call and tell them we said hi. Also, the organic wine company, Eco Wine, 1-888-ECOWINE. Be sure to drop by on Monday or Tuesday, the Hilton Hotel in Washington, D.C. I will be broadcasting live from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. I actually do 6 hours of talk radio a day, Monday and Tuesday. Well, actually, I do every day, but first 3 hours is my local show in Portland, Oregon. The next 3 hours, this program that you're listening to. And we'll be broadcasting live from the Take Back America 2006 conference. And as I said, that'll be at the Washington Hilton. So drop by and say hi. 1-866-440-8466. Our telephone number, Scott in San Diego. Hey, you have an update on the Busby race?
Yeah, I sure do, Tom. I just got done talking with the Registrar of Voters over here in the county of San Diego and found out that yesterday's figures were incorrect. There were 95,000 outstanding ballots, of which 66,500 have yet to be counted today.
And what percentage of those are in the 50th district?
They couldn't tell me that kind of breakdown. I asked them for that kind of breakdown, and they couldn't tell me.
They probably won't know until they open the envelopes, I would guess.
That's what they were telling me. They won't know until they count them. Here's some other interesting Oh, by the way, as a follow-up, if the votes turn out that Busby won, she will be awarded the seat, regardless of whether she conceded or not.
Interesting. Yeah, well, you would expect that to be the case, but that's good to hear that it's officially the case.
It's officially the case. Now, here's something else that really, really makes me interested. As you know, we use touch screens down here and the optical scans.
Right.
These machines were sent home with poll workers up to 2 weeks in advance of the vote.
Oh, I know. The poll workers had them overnight before they brought them in.
So they had them up to 2 weeks in their homes before they brought them in the morning of the election.
Yeah, so if you wanted to reprogram a voting machine, or if your 14-year-old kid wanted to reprogram a voting machine...
He sure could. There's no real
have
chain
at
of custody,
it.
Although they say there is. When you have them in your house, there's no more chain of custody because they're not secure.
Yeah, this is something Brad Friedman has been publicizing over at bradblog.com, and it's a big story.
I will conclude today's report with they are still counting the absentee ballots. That's the most of what they have, absentee and provisional ballots. 66,500 outstanding. They'll post the results tonight at 5, and they will post additional results Monday at 5 at www.sdvotes.com. And right on top, you can see the primary election results.
Do they expect that they will? When do they expect that they will have all the votes counted, Scott? And do the if they're updating the count every day as time goes on, how has the margin of error or the margin of victory or defeat changed in the last couple of days?
I haven't been able to get that information from David, but I'm expecting a call back from Maria Alvarado, who is a supervisor for the absentee ballots. She'll probably have some more information for me.
Okay. As soon as you get it, would you let us know?
Absolutely.
And if it's when we're off the air, feel free to just drop me an email.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tom.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Scott. Good talking to you. And thanks for staying on top of this there in San Diego. 1-866-440-8466. Robert, Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Robert.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
I was thinking that, what was the name of your last guest again?
David Tebow. It's spelled T-H-E-O-B-A-L-D, I think. I don't have it right in front of me, but it's like, you know, it's the French spelling that is pronounced Tebow.
Okay, well, I felt like he was talking about voters as if they were robots or automatons.
Yeah. Excuse me, it's T-H-I-B-E-A-U-L-T. In fact, at one point I wanted to say, Okay, so somebody shouldn't be allowed to vote if in the previous 24 hours they've talked to a liberal. What about somebody who's talked to a conservative in the previous 24 hours? I mean, that sort of seemed to be the point.
Yeah, well, exactly. What I was thinking is he's talking about liberals on the side of the road calling people with their clipboards to come to vote. Now, these people think for themselves, and more importantly, they have lives and responsibilities. They have families, they have jobs, they have all these things that are taking the time out of their lives. So if they're going to be, if they're going to make the decision to vote, there's going to be a reason that they want to vote for. They're not going to do it blindly, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I just graduated from college, and I had 4 years to immerse myself in issues, and I could think about these issues, and therefore I had more incentive or more resolution to go out and vote. But mm-hmm. if somebody wants to vote, there's a reason that they want to vote. It's not like they're doing it blindly, because they have so much more they have to do in their lives.
Yeah, and we have laws against paying people to vote, which is a form of vote fraud that I think we can all agree on, that used to happen back in the late 1900s, early 20th century, with some incredible regularity in the machine states, you know, in a lot of the big cities. You had politicians, you know, vote early, vote often, or not, you know, we'll pay you $5 a vote, or that's all illegal now. So now it's just a matter of, oh, you've been manipulated, and I don't buy it. But you know, a lot of conservatives do, and they're very concerned about this, and I think that we need to address their concerns as well as they need to address ours. Robert, thanks for the call.
Yeah, thank you.
Good to hear from you. Is it Tamara or Tamara in Joplin, Missouri?
It's Tamara, Tom. It's me, Blue and Mo. Hey, everybody.
Okay, hey, Tamara.
Look, I live in Missouri, and I wish the Republicans would get their facts straight.
Mm-hmm.
What happened in St. Louis was, just before the 2000 election, Republican precincts, or precincts run by Republicans, were closed, which left about 50% of the black Democrat voters with no place to vote. So they get up to their precinct, and it's closed.
You mean the precincts?
Nothing on the door telling them where to vote.
Now, hang on just a second. You said the precincts run by Republicans. You mean the political machine, or the political, the folks who run the voting places decided to close precincts in Democratic areas?
Yes.
Okay.
So when the voters got there to vote, nothing on the door telling them where to go.
Right. So what did they do?
Their precinct was closed. So they go home, and, you know, on voter election day, forget it. You're going to spend 2-3 hours trying to get a hold of the election board.
Sure.
To find out where you're supposed to vote.
Right.
So by the time they got in line at 7 p.m., there were thousands and thousands and thousands of people in line all over the city. And 50% of them were black Americans.
And this was because you say the Republicans had messed with closing precincts.
Right.
Is it like in Ohio where you actually have partisan officials who are also Secretary of State or
yes.
county election boards?
Yes.
And isn't St. Louis a Democratic city?
Yes.
So
yes.
So that would mean it was Democrats who decided to close some of those precincts, wouldn't it?
Well, actually, The voter thing was actually run by a Republican.
I see.
Matt Blunt in 2000. Our state voter was Matt Blunt. In fact, the state of Missouri was sued by the Department of Justice here just a few months back. And they sued Robin Carnahan, who is the daughter of Mel Carnahan that died in the plane crash.
Right, the Democrat.
And it was her mother that actually beat John Ashcroft.
Right, she took the seat, yeah.
In
yeah.
the Senate.
Right.
So, you know, if they would get their facts straight, but I'm a registered voter. I moved here 10 years ago, and the second day I was here, I re-registered to vote, and I have not missed, I haven't missed an election since I was 18.
Yeah, well, good on you, Tara.
But when I
good
went to vote in 2000, my name had been scrubbed off the books. I voted in the primary.
Is this because you're a Republican? You're registered as a Democrat?
Well, in Missouri, we don't pick. We just register.
I see.
When you vote in the primary, that's when they know whether you're a Democrat or a Republican.
So when I
went to vote in the general election, my name was gone off the books. I had to vote provisional ballot.
And you don't know to this day whether it was counted, do you?
No, I don't, but I turned a young newspaper reporter onto it from the Joplin Globe, And he found that here in Jasper County, Republicans that have been dead 10 years still vote.
But Democrats who vote in the Democratic primary suddenly find their names missing from the rolls.
Exactly.
Amazing.
And it is a Republican that runs our county elections here.
Okay. Tamara,
so,
thanks for sharing
this. Missouri was stolen in 2000, and I'm not sure about 2004, but Missouri voted both times for Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
We are a swing state, and all they have to do is tweak it just enough to not make us look suspicious.
Yeah, well, I think you can bet on what happened in 2004. Tamara, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Phil in Tampa Bay. Hey, Phil, we have about a half a minute. What's up?
I was disappointed you didn't bring up to that jerk from that right-wing website.
Oh, he's not a jerk. Come on. He's willing to come on this program. There are so many Republicans who are absolutely afraid to come on this program. I think we need to give David a little respect here.
All right. Ann Coulter is now being investigated for vote fraud. Okay, it's
right.
A felony charge. It could bring her a $5,000 fine and 5 years in prison. I wish you would have thrown that at him and said, gee, would you support her going to the penitentiary here in Florida if she's convicted?
Yeah, well, good point. I had forgotten.
She's hired an attorney. Okay.
She would say, I would guess that, you know, people are picking at nits that she's a real, real live voter, but and that she voted. Didn't she register at the home of her agent, her literary agent,
yeah,
or something
no,
like
her
that?
Her real estate agent.
Her real estate agent. Yeah, I knew it was some kind of.
And agent. I think she also votes in Washington D.C. as well.
Okay. Well, we'll see how this shakes out. Phil, thanks for the call.
All right.
I appreciate the reminder. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We'll be back with your calls and more. On this, by the way, our inspector just caved. He wants to give amnesty to everybody in the Bush administration for illegally spying on us. Be right back.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And there's always somebody who says what the others just whisper. And mostly that someone's the first one to get shot down dead. So when you talk to a cowboy, don't treat him like he was a sister. You can't with a lady that's sleeping in each cowboy's head.
And welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Yes, Arlen Specter, according to today's New York Times, Arlen Specter has proposed legislation coming out of the Senate Judiciary Committee, proposed legislation that would, A, say that Bush now has the option of seeking a warrant before he listens in on our conversations, making it optional, just like Bush does with pollution controls, and B, give blanket amnesty to anyone who authorized warrantless surveillance under presidential authority. This is, I'm quoting from the New York Times. Another part of the Specter bill would grant blanket amnesty to anyone who authorized warrantless surveillance under presidential authority, a provision that seems to ensure that no one would be held criminally liable if the current program is found illegal under present law. Arlen Specter, if you live in Pennsylvania, you should be calling his office and giving them absolute hell. And even if you don't live in Pennsylvania, the toll-free number for Congress, 1-888-355-3588. 1-888-355-3588. Back to the issue at hand, votes for the day. Sandra at Sacramento, California, listening on KSAC, Talk City there. Hey, Sandra.
Hey, Tom. I love your show. Listen.
Thank you.
This is a bit weird to say, but do people, white people, really believe that when you talk like that man talks and then throw up the fact that Blackwell is black, all is forgiven? I mean, it's unbelievable.
I know.
I'm just so disturbed by it. It's like, hello, so black people are all dumb and ignorant, so they don't need to vote. You know, he might be saying that. He really should.
I really don't think that David thought that that was the subtext of what he was saying, but it sounds that way to you and me.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just like, it's the same old song and dance. It's like he couldn't come up with nothing with the white Neanderthal to go to the mass churches. That's okay, but he's talking about the same thing, yet their vote somehow is more educated and informed than these people in the inner city. What does that sound like to you?
Yeah. Well, I
okay,
already
that's
said
all
it.
I got. That's all yeah. I got to say. I love your show. Bye.
Thank you, Sandra. Appreciate it. Nancy in San Francisco, California. Hey, Nancy.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Well, I have issue with Mr. Thibault's rationale as well. I mean, I have a feeling that there's pressure on both sides of the political spectrum trying to get all kinds of people to vote. What would he have us do? How can this, in real terms, what would the scenario be? Do you all of a sudden put the limit on people who've been voting all of their lives, and now you say to them, in my mother's case, let's say, it's frustrating for me. She doesn't understand the issues, but she votes. She's educated. She's been voting all of her life. She's, you know, a senior citizen who feels like she knows what she's voting on, but when I talk with her about issues, she really, unfortunately, it doesn't seem to understand what I think she should understand. Now, given that she's still allowed to go out and vote, what would Mr. Thibault do with someone like that?
Well, I don't know, and I probably should have kept him over for the hour so he could answer the question. I'll tell you, it is a conundrum. I mean, my mother has Alzheimer's, and she's a good, staunch Republican, and she votes Republican and I want to defend her right to do that.
Right.
So,
and I think
we
have a better chance of changing the corrupt ballot machines than we do of, you know, trying to change our.
Yeah, I think that we need to be looking at our systemic problems.
I agree.
the machinery, the infrastructure, rather than at the individuals who are voting.
I just think that it would cause a big wave of problems with everyone in the country. You would just really have an outcry.
Yep. Well said. Nancy, thank you for calling.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Dan in Seattle, Washington. Dan, you're live and on the air.
Hey, Tom. I just went and saw Greg Palast last night at the Seattle Town Hall, and it was something else.
Yeah, he can really, he's a brilliant speaker and a brilliant guy. He was sitting in the studio just 4 feet from me last week. So. Earlier this week, Monday, I guess.
Everybody needs to go and see Greg.
He
was talking about the 3.5 million votes that never got counted, of which 88% were black people.
Yeah.
3.5 million votes have not been counted in the 2004 election, and like 250,000 of them in Ohio.
Yeah, well, you go back and you look at what happened in Florida, and all these people got thrown off the voting rolls for the simple crime of VWB, voting while black.
Yeah,
and
the guy that you had on, you know, you're right. He's got a lot of courage to come on and spew his thing. But he just forgets about the churches with all, they're handing out, you know, voter registrations at every friggin' church 6 months before every election. And I mean, these people think the earth is only 6,000 years old. And he's talking about liberals with low IQs. What's going on here?
It's a good point. Good point. Peter, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. I got to move along here. Ed in Dayton, Ohio, because we only have 1 minute left. Ed, what's up?
I just wanted to say, so much of what I had originally intended to say has already been said, so I don't need to take a lot of your time anyway, but I just, in Ohio, you know, we were able to witness firsthand the kind of disingenuous voter registration tactics of the Republicans, and I'm so grateful for the woman in Missouri who explained what was going on there, but it happened all over this state.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, I don't know, and I'll try to be polite, I don't know if your guest, Mr. Thibault, is a racist, but I do know that...
I really don't think he is. I suspect that this operates below the level of consciousness for these folks.
He's disingenuous because it is common knowledge what was going on in Missouri and the reasons why they extended the amount of time in St. Louis were based on the things that blew in Mo said. And I'm neither a Democrat nor a Republican, but I can see what's going on, and there's a huge amount of Republican crookedness.
Yeah, well, let's hope that David was simply misinformed. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt for the moment. And Ed, thanks for the call.
Okay,
good to
thanks.
Hear from you. Good talking with you. We'll continue this conversation. We have more news for you coming up. By the way, did you know that George W. Bush had 3 opportunities to kill Zarqawi and turned it down each time because it wouldn't have been politically useful? I'll tell you all about that right after this break for the news. We'll be back 57 minutes past the hour at the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Call calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where reason is our lifestyle choice. 6 minutes past the hour. Hey, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Congratulations to the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. I just have to say, I am so impressed. Yes, congratulations. The associate publisher of the Kenneth Bunting of the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, SeattlePI.com. has written an op-ed piece, associate publisher, Public Interest in News Topics Beyond Control of Mainstream Media, about Robert F. Kennedy's article. So finally, a major newspaper, a major national newspaper, has talked about Bobby Kennedy's article, and good on you. Good on you, Kenneth Bunting. Dar Jamail is with us. He's D-A-H-R-J-A-M-A-I-L, Iraq, IRAQ.com, his website. Dar Jamail, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom.
Hey, Dar. You have done some extraordinary writing on the whole Zarqawi phenomena. You went to Jordan. You tracked down his home. Well, tell us the story.
Yeah, I had enough doubts in my own mind about even the existence of Zarqawi because his role's been so overblown in Iraq by the U.S. government. And so last summer when I was in Amman, Jordan, I went to Zarqa, which is a small city just outside of Amman, about a 30-minute taxi ride, and I went to his neighborhood. I went to mosques where he used to pray, and I spoke with many of his old friends and went to some of his relatives' homes and found out that he does indeed exist or did indeed exist, but I even then there were doubts whether he was still alive, and certainly the consensus I obtained from I spoke with there was if he was in Iraq, his role was a minor one at best.
Now, Dar Jamail, you wrote this article, there's the Zarqawi phenomenon, that is, in my opinion, one of the very best analyses of the whole, well, literally, the Zarqawi phenomenon. And correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like there's a certain symbiosis here, that George W. Bush needed a bad guy so that he could claim that we were actually fighting foreign terrorists inside Iraq, and Zarqawi needed to be a hero so that he could gain political support and financial support and turn himself into something other than a street thug. And so they kind of did it together.
That's exactly right. They played their both of their agendas essentially catered perfectly to the other entity's agenda, where Bush needed a bad guy because it looks really bad for his administration, who supposedly liberated the Iraqi people, to then have to admit that, even according to the U.S. military, at least 96% of the people they're fighting in Iraq are Iraqis, that at most 6% of the people launching attacks in there against occupation forces are from outside of Iraq. So they needed a villain, ideally someone not Iraqi, and of course Zarqawi needed all the propaganda and to be sort of blown up into these mythical proportions as he could get. And so in that way, exactly as you made clear, that they certainly served each other very, very well, particularly in regards to propaganda.
Yeah, and George W. Bush also needed, you know, as Superman had to have a Lex Luthor, or Batman had to have, you know, the Juggler or the Iceman or whatever, he had to have a super anti-hero in order to be a superhero. And Zarqawi filled that role, and to a large extent, you suggest that superhero-ness or super anti-hero, super villain-ness of Zarqawi was really an invention of the Bush administration.
It very much was an invention of the Bush administration. I mean, this is an individual that they didn't even mention until 2002, and it's an individual who wouldn't even have been a factor in Iraq to this day, ever, if they hadn't made him out to be sort of this Darth Vader of the occupation, sort of the new Osama bin Laden, sort of the villain that they can cart out and point the finger to and blame everything in Iraq that's gone bad, that, well, it's Zarqawi's fault. Zarqawi, even Rumsfeld stated that Zarqawi has probably personally killed more people than anyone alive today, a nice bit of projection by Mr. Rumsfeld, but it has gotten completely out of control, as to how much power he had. The BBC, along with countless right-wing pundits here in the U.S., even referred to him as the leader of the Iraqi resistance, which would be quite a feat, looking at the fact that, again, according to the military, there could be as many as 100 different resistance groups in Iraq. So he would have been quite the unifier to have pulled that one off. So, again, really the level of mythical proportions he was raised to, along with the amount of propaganda spewed around his name and building him into this kind of titan that they could bring down and then now beat their chests over, as we saw both Bush and Blair do yesterday, has been quite a phenomenon.
Dar Jamail, website, DARJAMAIL, Iraq, IRAQ, .com. To what extent do you think that the death of Zarqawi is going to have any influence at all on what's happening in Iraq?
Well, I think that's the most important question that any of us should ask out of this whole situation with Zarqawi being killed. And I think the answer is I would go back to cite what occurred to me when I was in Baghdad in December 2003, the middle of that month when Saddam Hussein was pulled from the hole just north of Tikrit. And when I asked Iraqis how they thought this would affect their situation, their lives, and already I'm getting this response from some of my friends in Baghdad, and they're saying the same thing, is that is killing Zarqawi or capturing Saddam, is it going to get me a job? Is it going to stop the violence in my country? Is it going to give me more than 3 hours of electricity per day? Is it going to give me drinking water that won't give me waterborne diseases? Without a doubt, the answer to all those questions is no, it's not going to do anything to improve the lives of the Iraqi people or improve the situation on the ground in that country at all.
Dar Jamail, in 2004, March 2nd, 2004, 2 years ago, 2 years and a couple of months ago, Jim Mikuláševský, the Pentagon correspondent for NBC News, filed a report in which he said, with Tuesday's attacks, Abu Musab Zarqawi, a Jordanian militant with ties to al-Qaeda, is now blamed for more than 700 terrorist killings in Iraq. But NBC News has learned that long before the war, the Bush administration had several chances to wipe out his terrorist operation and kill Zarqawi himself, but never pulled the trigger. In June of 2002, U.S. officials say intelligence had revealed that Zarqawi and members of al-Qaeda had set up a weapons lab in Kerma. In other words, he was up in the no-fly zone in Iraq. The Pentagon quickly drafted plans to attack the camp with cruise missiles and airstrikes and sent it to the White House, where, according to U.S. government sources, the plan was debated to death in the National Security Council. Michael O'Hanlon, military analyst at Brookings Institution. Here we had targets, opportunities, a country willing to support casualties or risk casualties after 9/11, and we still didn't do it. And then he goes on to say, 4 months later, intelligence showed Zarqawi was planning to use ricin in terrorist attacks in Europe. The Pentagon drew up a second strike plan, and the White House again killed it. By then, the administration has set its course for war with Iraq. This is all before we invaded Iraq. Apparently, the White House didn't want Zarqawi killed because then they could have, you know, we could have said, well, the terrorist is gone. He says, in fact, Roger Cressy says, people were more obsessed with developing a coalition to overthrow Saddam than to execute the president's policy of preemption against terrorists. And then in January 2003, the Pentagon drew up another attack to kill Zarqawi, and the administration, but military officials insist their case for attacking Zarqawi's operation was airtight, but the administration feared destroying the terrorist camp in Iraq could undercut its case for war against Saddam. This is NBC News reporting this 2 years ago. Why is the mainstream media not reporting this now?
Well, that's a very good question, and I think it needs to be an open question that we keep asking repeatedly until maybe we see a change in some of this reporting, because I think simply it's why we could ask the same question of why did they not report on atrocities and torture occurring in Abu Ghraib until Seymour Hersh for 60 Minutes 2 to air that story? Why have they not reported on the fact that as many as 6,000 people were slaughtered in Fallujah during the U.S. siege on that city in November 2004. Why are they not reporting on ongoing atrocities in Iraq, where Hadith is just the tip of the iceberg? And again, it really is a situation where I think really you answered the question in giving the information that you did in posing the question, which is simply to have peace in Iraq, to not have some bad guy, to not have some specter looming, some way to justify the occupation. You can't continue it legitimate and retain credibility. credibility in the international community. If there is peace in Iraq, if all of a sudden there is no fighting, all attacks on occupation forces stop, there is no threat of civil war, even though we already have civil war, if all of that goes away, how do you justify continuing the occupation? It makes it really difficult to do.
Yeah, it's a really terrible... it's a terrible take on it, but it seems to be absolutely confirmed by reality on the ground. Dahr Jamail, his website, DahrJamail, Iraq, IRAQ.com. Is that's the best website for you, Dahr?
That is, Tom, thanks.
Okay. Dahr Jamail, author of The Zarqawi Phenomenon. Dahr, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks again, Tom.
And for the great work you're doing. 16 minutes past the hour, it's the Tom Hartmann radio program, Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting. We'll be right back.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartmann.
And welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartmann radio program, the place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination, or at least a clean election. I mean, we'd really settle for that. It'd be a good start. Bob Borisaj is with us. He's the director of the Campaign for America's Future, host of the gig that I'll be broadcasting live from Monday and Tuesday in Washington, D.C. at the Hilton Hotel. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
I'm just great. Bob, tell us about the conference.
Well, the conference is going to be a 2,000 activists from across the country, and the energy, the ideas, the campaigns, the issues, the leaders that are going to define a different direction for this country after the failure of the right.
For example?
Well,
some of the people.
The people include Barack Obama, Russ Feingold, John Kerry, Robert Redford. We've got a couple governors there. We've got Cecile Richards, the head of Planned Parenthood, Walter Mosley, the novelist. David Sirota has just come out with a great book on the buying of government. Kevin Phillips, who's done his good work on what the Republicans have wrought, particularly in terms of the global deficits. It's going to be quite a scene. We've got Barbara
Lee
and Gary Hart talking about real security.
It's interesting that Kevin Phillips, you know, who was a longtime, major, big-time Republican, would identify himself with a political viewpoint. Up to this point, I'd seen him, you know, promoting his book and books, actually, several brilliant and insightful books he's written recently, and worldview, but not lining up with any group.
Well, I don't think, you know, he's appearing. I don't think he would say he's voting for our group or anything, but he's...
it's an openly progressive conference.
Yeah, no question. And his position is that, you know, he's trying to raise the alarm about we're going to run a $1 trillion global deficit this year, and he thinks it's nuts. And it is parallel to what other great countries did before their decline, and he's trying to raise the alarm, so he's coming here to help us learn about it.
Okay, we're talking with Bob Borisaj. He's the director of the Campaign for America's Future. Take Back America is the conference.
Right.
Take
Washington,
Back America
D.C.
2006.
Washington, D.C. starts on Monday. The timing of this is perfect. We now see the failure of the right. They basically had their way over the last, certainly the last 5 years, and they got it wrong. And now it's time for a very different direction, and this conference is going to be part of the process of helping to define that.
The website, ourfuture.org. In fact, I'd say they've had their way since about 1980. I mean,
Reagan
started this whole thing, deconstructing democracy, taking apart his war on organized labor and everything else. Tell us about the Campaign for America's Future and the Institute for America's Future.
The campaign's a center of progressive ideas and organizing. We were started with a conscious effort by 200 leaders to try to challenge the rightward drift of our politics in both parties in the United States and to lay out an economic agenda that worked for working people as opposed to the ones that we've been following. And so we've been doing that over the years and making the argument that there is a very different,
progressive majority for change that's possible, but you've got to be able to stand up and speak clearly about what you're going to do in relationship to the economy, and now, of course, what you're going to do in relationship to real security.
And so what are we going to do?
Well, in terms of the real security thing, we'll lay out an agenda about what our security needs really need, and that will include a plan to get out of Iraq, because clearly staying in that bloody occupation is simply a massive disservice to our security. We're creating more terrorists than we're killing every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll lay out big ideas on the agenda, really the need to challenge what's been a trickle-down policy, which has worked for the top end, but for most Americans has left them behind. And we've got to move to something that holds executives accountable and empowers workers, that invests in the things we need to make our economy and our people stronger, and rolls back the tax cuts that essentially have created more jobs in China than they have here.
Indeed. Bob Borisash. Am I pronouncing your last name right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, okay. Ourfuture.org, the website. And do you folks, there's a number of progressive kind of think tanks and organizations emerging, the Center for American Progress, one of the more well-known ones. Are you cooperative, competitive? Is there a relationship?
We're cooperative. The center is the, you know, it's the big kahuna on the scene. It's operating at a level mm-hmm. that we would aspire to but aren't even close to. It tends to be the big tent in the Democratic Party, center left, center liberal.
Mm-hmm.
We pride ourselves on being part of the progressive side of town, and the Paul Wellstone, the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party. So there's a creative tension, but there's a lot of cooperation. We do some many things together.
Yeah, I would say you guys are actually doing it. You say you aspire to. I mean, this conference, last year's conference, a whole bunch of people I know attended, and I'm really looking forward to being there on the Radio Row this year, and heard just extraordinary things about it. It's going to be Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at the Washington Hilton Hotel. Is the website ourfuture.org the best place to go for information about it?
Right, ourfuture.org.
OURfuture.org. It is the campaign for America's future, the conference Take Back America 2006. It'll be at the Hilton in Washington, D.C. Bob, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
I look forward to seeing you next week. 27 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman radio program, The True People's Radio.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program.
And welcome back, my friends. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's a place where we run rings around the right wing 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Indeed. Time now for a quick look at the developments in Iraq.
I want to know the man in the shadows of. I want to hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are. But they're never the ones to fight or to die. And they're alive in the balance.
Baghdad authorities enforced a traffic ban in an apparent attempt to prevent al-Qaeda reprisals of the killing of Zarqawi. Interior Ministry said the ban in Baghdad and Bakhaba was effective. In Mosul, gunmen shot dead Zuhir Muhammad Kusama, a brother of the governor of Mosul province. In Ramadi, gunmen attacked two civilian trucks carrying construction material for a U.S. base. The trucks were destroyed. And in Fallujah, gunmen shot dead one civilian in central Fallujah. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Julie in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Julie, welcome to the program.
With me, you're going to go from the national...
Hey, Julie?
Yes?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're on the air.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Okay. All
right. With me, you go from the national elections down to state and local.
Ah.
Ah. You had a call from Rick in Grand Rapids earlier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he made comments about something local that is incorrect. He said that the trash collection had been privatized and it hasn't.
No, I think he said that you had to buy from, presumably from the city, a garbage bag that has a city logo on it. Is that
how
it
works? Can buy either city garbage bags or you can buy tags. I've always preferred tags.
I see.
Because with tags, if you want to put out a chair or a tire, you can
put
that
a tag
out.
On it. Yeah.
Or you can tie it onto a regular trash bag, and you can store a lot more of them than you can trash bags.
Yeah, a lot of communities are doing that. Okay, I got it.
The city stopped doing yard waste collection. You still need their bags for yard waste collection and their tags, but they let that out. However, in this area, we have free recycling. It's unfortunate more people don't take advantage of it because then you need less tags.
Yep.
Another thing, he was talking about the governor race, the gubernatorial race.
Actually, I did. I was the one who brought that up.
But the Republican wannabe has been running ads, very professionally made ads since February. And Governor Granholm just recently started running ads. I saw the first one today. And actually, it sounds like they're both on the same page on just about everything.
Well, yeah, except,
he's against single business tax, and he's making it a big deal. But single business tax has been here while Governor Engler was in charge, and he was a Republican for 12 years.
Yep.
And he did nothing about it.
Julie, I'm sorry, but I at this particular moment in time, I really can't get into the politics of Michigan and Grand Rapids on the program. But I appreciate your calling and setting us straight on some of these things. Joe in Brookings, Oregon. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I want to talk about that article by RFK Jr. in Rolling Stone magazine. Quite frankly, I get sick and tired of hearing about Ohio.
Have you read his article, Joe?
No, I haven't, but I've
okay. All righty. If you haven't read it, then call back when you've read it. I'd be pleased to talk to you about it. Carrie in Greenfield, Massachusetts. Hey, Carrie, what's up?
Hi, Tom. You're a true patriot. Thank you for everything you do.
I'm calling because
I might have some good news. There's been a grassroots effort to get the residents of Massachusetts to contact their state legislature, encourage them to take advantage of the Jefferson House rules, section 603.
Right.
And so far I guess they've got a number of phone calls. There have been some letters to the editor about the subject. And Massachusetts is actually uniquely unique because they have such a vast majority of Democrats in their in the legislature. It would require a late filing, however, at this point to get it done. But I think it would be really interesting because if they did proceed with this, even with a late filing, it would give the people of Massachusetts an idea of what representatives or senators in the state legislature don't support it. Because if I think they don't support holding this administration accountable, they should find another job in November, frankly.
Yep, I agree. I absolutely agree with you, Carrie. And thank you for... go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I just wanted to encourage all your Massachusetts listeners to call your state legislature. Find out who they are. You can go online. You can get the numbers. Call them.
Yeah,
and
get involved.
Difference.
Great. Carrie, thank you very much. And the call letters of the radio station you're listening on?
I don't know. It's I'm really not quite sure. It's 1240 a.m.
A.m. 1240 there in Greenfield, Massachusetts. Thank you very much. Great
thank
to hear
you,
from
Tom.
You.
Thank you, Tom. Bye-bye.
Good talking with you. Troy in Longview, Washington. Hey, Troy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Good afternoon to you. Hey, I just wanted to chime in a little bit today on the guest speaker that you had, Dave. Didn't catch it. I don't remember his last name. I just wanted to say that, you know, he's talking about inner city people and alienating their right to vote. And these are the same people that benefit both from the Democrats being in charge with the programs that we like to support for our inner city people. And I just feel that, you know, that's kind of backs up the Republican agenda. Let's not get them out to vote, and let's take away the same people to benefit from Democrats being in charge.
Right. We don't need those thinking programs for anybody. We don't need those thinking bootstraps for people. You know, it's very much the conservative perspective. Bootstraps?
Right.
No, forget it. Yeah.
And I totally stand by, you know, one man, one vote. If you can get into the polling place, by golly, you have a right to cast a ballot.
at least in the United States up until this point, unless you live in Ohio or Florida. Troy, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Peter in Durham, you too. Peter in Durham, North Carolina. Hey, Peter, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to make a comment, one, about the death tax that you were talking about earlier.
You mean the Paris Hilton tax?
Oh, exactly. Well, what it amounts to is an effort to create a class distinction. There'll be the haves and the have-nots. The whole idea of the death tax was something that helped redistribute wealth. And otherwise, you'll create dynasties.
Right. And in fact, we already have dynasties. The inheritance tax would just somewhat diminish the impact and size of them. Because ultimately, if you don't have some sort of limit on dynastic acquisition of wealth, eventually you end up with most of society being owned by a very small number of people. And you
which
shift
we already
from,
have.
Yeah, and you shift from democracy to oligarchy, which is really not a healthy thing.
Right. Well, that's what we've really already begun, and that's what they want to continue to head us down. The other thing is the gentleman that was on before that has his radio show, he kept saying, let's get over it. You lost. Well, no, yeah. The truth is we didn't lose. Stalin said it doesn't matter who votes. It matters who counts the votes. Yeah. And, you know, we have
I know that.
Clear
he was,
evidence on both sides that both elections were stolen. And I don't think most people really realize just how serious this whole matter is.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I devoted 3 hours of this program to it earlier in the week.
Good man. You're a good man.
Yeah, and we'll continue to talk about it. I just didn't want to take his bait on that particular topic because I knew that it would just get into a he said, she said with him. And there was a larger issue that I wanted to discuss, which was, you know, who has the right to vote in the United States in the minds of conservatives?
Yep.
And I think David laid it out for us pretty clearly.
No,
Peter, thank you very much. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Jeff in Sacramento, California. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Oh, the same old thing, Tom. How are you?
I'm great. What's up?
Well, just saying, I was going to answer that question that you had about why the media is not picking up on all these stories, and you're saying that they're corporate media. And I think the reason is because the progressive radios are no longer credible. I mean,
well, progressive media is picking up on these stories, Jeff. Who's not picking up on these stories are the media that are owned by large defense contractors. Like you won't see this being discussed on Chris Matthews' show on MSNBC, which is owned by General Electric, which is a huge defense contractor.
But you don't hear about the same kind of stuff on the regular news channels, and the reason is because they want something that's credible before they can report it. And
no, it's because they want something that is not going to harm their corporate interests.
No, I mean, for years...
The story I read, if you're talking about the story about Zarqawi, about the Bush administration having three opportunities to take out Zarqawi, that was a story that was run on NBC News.
No, I listen to the Progressive all the time, and I could now predict exactly how you guys are going to play each story, and that's wrong, because, for the last couple of years, all you guys could talk about is how it hurt Bush and doing all this damage. And now when he got killed, and it's a good thing, he's no longer important. And this is the kind of stuff that...
Jeff, I'm sorry, you're not making any sense.
Progressive, including you.
Share some of the stuff you're smoking with the rest of us. But
Zarqawi has caused to the Bush, and that he's going to be forever a problem. Okay,
you have heard me talk about Zarqawi being a problem to George Bush in the past? I don't think so. I wrote an article a year and a half ago. You can find it over at commondreams.org or go to tomhartman.com and click articles on democracy called something about a handful of kryptonite for Super George, about how George W. Bush was creating supervillains because he needed them because his own presidency was in trouble and he had to have somebody to make him look good so that he could make them look bad.
And you're probably why I listen to you more than the others. But Randy and Ed Schultz and all they use the same kind of thing.
Well, those, I think I like Randy and I like Ed Schultz, but this is my program. If you want to attack me, fine. If you're going to attack them, call their show. Jeff, thanks for the call, though. It's good to hear from you. Even people who disagree, actually, especially people who disagree with me, great to hear from you. We'll be back with your calls and more right after this. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where smart people get their news.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
your touch and all that you see, all that you taste, all you feel.
And welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. The Tom Hartman radio program. Special thanks to my producer, David Poole, to Louise Hartman, to Alex Goldmark, Dan Jacobs, to Clay, to Tim at Air America Radio, to Ben and Shelby at White Rose Society and RadioPower.org, to Sue Nethercutt, the folks in our chat room, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. Time now for...
Now, the Delay Political Death Watch.
Yes, indeed. Tom Delay on the way out. Don't hit yourself with the door as you're on the way out there, Tom. Here, Tom Delay attacking liberals on his last day in the House.
Liberalism, after all, whatever you may think of its merits, is a political philosophy, and a proud one, with a great tradition in this country, with a voracious appetite for growth. In any place or any time on any issue, what does liberalism ever seek, Mr. Speaker? More. More government, more taxation, more control over people's lives and decisions and wallets. If conservatives don't stand up to liberalism, no one will.
This is really funny from the guy who oversaw the largest expansion of government in the history of the United States, the largest expansion of spending in the history of the United States, the largest expansion of taxation in the history of the United States, although, albeit, that those taxes will have to be paid by our children and grandchildren, but nonetheless, they will have to be paid. This day, and it's appropriate, I suppose, that this is the day in history when Joe McCarthy, remember Joe McCarthy, the guy who said...
Using not merely the communists, but the fellow travelers, the deluded liberals, the eggheads, and some of my good friends in both the Democrat and Republican Party, who can become heroes overnight in the eyes of the left-wing press if they will join with the Jackal Pack.
Yes, the Jackal Pack. Good old Joe McCarthy. Today is the day that Mr. Welch took him on.
Have you no sense of decency, sir, at long last?
And Joe McCarthy then sank into an alcoholic stupor for the rest of his relatively short life at that point. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Paul in Anchorage, Alaska. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hi. Morning, Tom. I just wanted to ask what you thought of the ethics of building up the celebrity of someone like Zakari and then going in and using a couple of 500-pound bombs and blowing away the neighborhood to kill someone suspected of being evil and never talking about the collateral damage.
Well, my understanding was that this wasn't a neighborhood, that this was a house in a relatively isolated area. Did I miss something?
Well, they talked about, first of all, I heard that Zarqawi was not found dead. He was found alive.
Yeah.
And that also there were other people in the house. He was found.
Yes, there was an older man, and there was a woman who was apparently pregnant, and there was a child who were killed, yes.
Yeah. Well, Israel does this all the time to the Palestinians. And all we hear about is that they caught this guy who was suspected of being a terrorist, and they never talk about the collateral damage.
Yeah, I think that with these debates, Paul, and it's a legitimate one to bring up, you have to kind of push it to the extreme. I mean, at what point do you take out somebody who is causing the deaths of many, many people, even if it means killing a few other people, to avoid the deaths of many people? In other words, if you knew, for example, that during World War II that you could have killed Hitler, but you would have had to take out an entire city block, would you have done it?
I disagree with that argument totally. These are people that we suspect of having committed those crimes. We have no proof that they committed those crimes.
Zarqawi is on videotape bragging that he committed those crimes.
Of course. Well, a lot of people brag about the crimes they've committed to gain prestige in their own country and amongst their own patriots. But
yeah.
we have no proof.
Here's my take on it. Number one, as we talked about in the last hour, George W. Bush has inflated Zarqawi all out of proportion. I mean, according to the Defense Department's numbers, only 6% of the fighters in Iraq, the people that were fighting against, at the most, in Iraq are from outside the country or associated with al-Qaeda. So first of all, Zarqawi really has nothing to do with the insurgency, I mean, or very, very little. But Bush did that because he needed to have a super enemy so that he could be a superhero. Superman without Lex Luthor is incredibly boring. And so, you know, Bush had to have his Lex Luthor, so he blew all out of proportion, he and the Defense Department over the last couple of years, Zarqawi. A. Zarqawi, on the other hand, wanted to be a big shot in al-Qaeda. So he used that. He took that and he says, okay, I'll take this and I'll run with it. So these two guys had a symbiotic relationship. And that's what seems to me so sick and weird, is that we were doing that we were rather, because Bush needs to do that because he can't just go on TV and say, well, you know, yeah, we're occupying Iraq right now. It's not a war. It's an occupation. And 95%, 94% of the people who are attacking us just happen to be the people whose country we are occupying. And, you know, trying to change the subject away from that. But, you know, the ethics of collateral damage, to use your phrase or to use the military's phrase, is a really a tough one, Paul. And I think it really depends on who the person is and what the situation is. And I'm not here to either defend or condemn the administration on this one. I don't frankly know enough about it. I wasn't there on the ground.
I think so. You are defending it because you're defending the philosophy of preemptive strikes. That if we suspect that somebody is an evil person, or if we suspect they have the potential for being an evil person.
Well, I'll say again, Zarqawi was not a suspect. Zarqawi was bragging about what he was doing.
That doesn't make him guilty.
Well, okay. We'll have to agree to disagree on that, Paul. It just seems to me that the evidence is pretty solid that he was at least involved in some murders of, you know, of Americans and Iraqis, if not many murders. But you know, time will tell, I suppose. Coming up on the next Tom Hartman program, Monday and Tuesday, I'll be live at the Take Back America 2006 conference in Washington, D.C. with thousands of progressive activists. They'll be dropping by. Wednesday, Peter Werby is going to be filling in as guest host while I fly home. That and more and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman radio program. Your radio support group of, by, and for we, the people of the United States. Remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you on Monday. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.